there's a phrase I like to call sudden wealth syndrome. I didn't invent the phrase, but it's a legitimate experience where if you come off of a big win, you need to take some time and be patient rather than just jump into other things. And at that point, I jumped into other things, and they were things that I really didn't understand, businesses that I wasn't intimately involved with. And frankly, I just had more money than brains at that point.
This is The Entrepreneur Way with Neil Ball.
Unlocking the secrets of successful entrepreneurs 7 days a week.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter at Neil D. Ball.
Napoleon Hill said the power of the mastermind is the driving force.
To discover how you can unlock the potential in your business using the power of a mastermind, go to mastermindunlimited.com. And now, here is your host, Neil Ball.
Hello, it's Neil Ball here. Thank you so much for joining me today on The Entrepreneur Way. The Entrepreneur Way is about the entrepreneur's journey, the vision, the mindset, the commitment, the sacrifice, failures and successes. I am so excited to bring you our special guest today, Seth Bueckley. But before I introduce you to Seth, I have a quote for you by John Henry Reese. Don't ask questions that you don't want the answer to. The Entrepreneur Way asks the questions so we all get the insight, inspiration and ideas to apply in our businesses. Seth, welcome to the show. Are you ready to share your version of the Entrepreneur Way with us?
I am offering up an enthusiastic yes, Neil, so thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Seth. I really appreciate it, and welcome to the show. Seth Bueckley is a serial entrepreneur and business founder who has used these life lessons to write a book that tackles the plaguing question of why ambitious people struggle to find satisfaction and reveals what they can do about it. His exceptional perspective, which began in a commune in the woods and led him to financial success through several multi-million dollar businesses, shines through his candid and indirect insights into the advantages and disadvantages of ambition. A seasoned entrepreneur and leader of high-growth companies, Seth illustrates the fundamental nature of gratitude in making the shift to lasting leadership impact. Seth, can you provide us with some more insights into your business and personal life to allow us to get to know more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am a second generation entrepreneur. I live here in the West Coast of the United States, and I have four kids. Got a daughter who's fully grown, and I have the privilege of working with her a little bit. And then I have three boys that are still in high school and junior high. And so I'm a busy dad, and I would be described as a serial entrepreneur in that I've founded and run probably half a dozen to 10 different companies over the last 20 years. And so I'm kind of wired as an entrepreneur, whether I like it or not.
6 to 10 companies over the last 20 years. So what's that journey been like? I take it they've not all been successful, and maybe some of them have. How has that worked out for you?
Well, to your point, they haven't all been successful. And strangely enough, I found that I've learned the most through the painful failures. But the first one was successful and the last one was successful. So mm-hmm. I can probably start there.
Yeah.
You know, my dad, as I said, was an entrepreneur, and he encouraged me to go into business with him rather than pursue the academic route. So I was in high school and, you know, I was kind of a go-getter, and he basically challenged me, saying, listen, you can go to college, you can do what everybody else seems to be doing with a plan, or you can come work with me, and I think I can have you as a millionaire by the time you're 25.
That's a nice promise.
Yeah, and of course, there were no guarantees. And I ended up working with him in a business where we constructed cellular networks. And so I literally started digging ditches and building towers and pouring concrete and doing all of the things in a little specialized construction company. But over time, I did have the chance to move around in the organization and kind of discover my own strengths and discover that I loved business. I remember being a little bit startled when I discovered that I actually liked sales, because that was always a little bit of a dirty word coming from a blue collar, you know, community. And we had a chance to grow the business. And eventually in the late 90s, when I was 27 years old, we sold that company to a much larger public company. And I had a chance to serve on the board of a public company. And so I had grown up literally in the woods of Southern Oregon in a commune, had done all the things that people say not to do, which is skip college, marry my high school sweetheart, go to work in a family business. And, you know, all of a sudden I find myself with more money than I ever thought, serving on the board of a public company. And about then, I think I probably told myself I wasn't possible of making mistakes.
So how did it feel going from having your own business to serving on the board of a public company?
I was surprised. What surprised me the most is I think I expected them to be much more organized. And what I found in reality is they weren't. While there was a lot of experience and there was a lot of wealth on the board, they weren't nearly as organized or strategic as I thought. And I had told myself a story that they would be very tabbed down. You know, I went out and bought a copy of Robert's Rules of Order just so I didn't feel like I was completely, you know, in the dark. And, you know, that really never came up. And so it was a great learning experience. But part of what I learned is I think we tell ourselves stories about other people being more organized than we are. And then when we get there, we realize it's often a lot like what it is in our own businesses.
So that was your first success. And you said that you'd had another one. The most recent business was also a success. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Sure. And I hope I get a chance to talk just as much about the failures too, because I do think that that's where so much of the learning. I just, in January of this year, I was privileged to exit a business that took us about 8 years to build. And essentially what we did is we sold and distributed systems that made the smartphones work inside major venues, major buildings. It could be a football stadium, could be a subway. And so we ended up with some very, very large projects like the New York subway system, like the Empire State Building, you know, campuses like Nike and Amazon, where they had a lot of buildings and they needed people. People needed to be able to use their cell phones. And so it was a company that we incubated and then had a strategy. And I was really given another chance after having some failures to come in and lead, and had a chance to build a team from scratch and grow it. And then we exited it for, you know, tens of millions of dollars, which was a great exit for my shareholders. I had two other shareholders along with me. And also we set the team up for success. And you know, both of those were really important to us as we looked at doing a transaction.
So was that business set up with the intention of exiting it at some point in the future?
I think the intention, you know, my philosophy on that is, you know, when you're starting a business, you should ask yourself if there is exit potential. Historically, I have not built a business specifically to sell it. I've built it to be successful, valuable, or profitable, right? And that's another way of saying if the business is profitable, you're going to have options to sell it. So don't focus on trying to sell it. Focus on making it profitable. In this case, it wasn't so much that the business was highly profitable, although it was profitable. We built the business in such a way that it would be very valuable to a strategic partner. And then ultimately the strategic partner purchased it.
And you also mentioned you've learned some things from your failures along the way. Is there anything that would be interesting to hear about now?
You know, I think that one of the things I've learned is that people that are wired as an entrepreneur, you know, we like to go solve problems. We're very impatient. And, you know, what I learned is there's this, when you come into wealth suddenly, especially if you don't come from a family that has a lot of experience in how to manage money and how to do investing, is, you know, there's a phrase I like to call sudden wealth syndrome. I didn't invent the phrase, but it's a legitimate experience where if you come off of a big win, you need to take some time and be patient rather than just jump into other things. And at that point, I jumped into other things, and they were things that I really didn't understand, businesses that I wasn't intimately involved with. And frankly, I just had more money than brains at that point. And I was doing things because I felt like I had to get back in the game. So kind of being sidelined after selling a business and leaving that business, I got really uncomfortable with, well, who am I now, right? And I had to go start other things so I could answer that question. Well, what is it that you do? And a lot of decisions that I made based on my gut and not necessarily on good strategy or good or accepting good counsel that I sought from others at that time.
And of course, you've taken all of this information and this experience that you've had along the way and use that to write your book. Can you just tell us something about your book?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking. You know, writing a book has always been kind of a dream of mine. The two reasons. One is I really would like my kids to understand how I viewed being an entrepreneur and business and really life and leadership. And the other is I had an English teacher who, when I was graduating, encouraged me. She said, you know what, you're a good writer. You need to keep writing. And it was just one of those encouraging moments in my life. And I thought, you know, someday I will. And so it had been in the back of my mind. And then as I started to speak, you know, as my platform in business and in life has kind of, expanded, I've had an opportunity to speak to entrepreneurs in particular. And what I found is that I was able to connect with them, and I was able to really zero in on a common problem that entrepreneurs face. And that's really why I wrote the book. And the book is called Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. And what I found is that a lot of entrepreneurs are very driven, but they necessarily haven't connected with what's driving them. Is it their nature, the way they were born, or is it their nurture, you know, the way they were raised? And, which is it? And then what are the dangers of being wired as a driven entrepreneur? And I was able to kind of look at it. I call it not a biography, but a whyography. You know, why is it people that are wired like me do the things I've done? You know, and these aren't all negative. I don't consider being ambitious negative. You know, I love entrepreneurs. I feel like that's my tribe, and I know it's your tribe. But I also feel like we celebrate a lot of the upsides and the victories, but we don't talk a lot about the downside risks that people that are entrepreneurial face. And if we're married or have a family, you know, we don't talk about the kind of things that they have to learn to deal with, or we have to be mindful of, because it's, you know, we have an obligation to look out for them as well. And so the book studies, you know, why is it that we're ambitious and what are the implications of being ambitious? And then really what we can do to kind of get a grip on some of those destructive pieces. And, you know, the subtitle, as I said, was Leading with Gratitude. And I walk people into the real key importance that gratitude plays in people that are driven.
And what do you enjoy most about what you do, Seth?
You know, I enjoy the freedom. And it's not just freedom from responsibility or obligations, which, of course, I like that too. But it's the freedom to create. You know, I like to solve problems. And so I feel as though being an entrepreneur by nature, we want to solve problems. We get a enjoyment from helping others and by solving problems. And so I look at business as a blank canvas where we get to create and we get to use our resources and our gifts, and we get to rally other people's resources and gifts towards, you know, some cause. And I think that there's a million causes, and that's why there's a million businesses.
And what is it that drives you?
I think I'm driven by wanting to make a difference, wanting to have an impact. You know, I I came up with the epitaph of what I want on my gravestone. I kind of felt like it was one of those epiphanies. And there were three things that were there. One is that he reached for his potential. The second one was he impacted his world. And the last one is he left a legacy. And so that has actually become a framework that I use for asking myself, you know, where do I want to spend my time, you know, reaching for my potential, impacting those that I've been given to lead, and then ultimately I think that leaves a legacy.
How do you relax when you're not working in your business?
You know, going snowboarding, skiing, anything outdoors that involves adrenaline and being outdoors, that's a perfect combination for me. So I like to ride motorcycles and drive ATVs and snowboard, and I like adventure. That's relaxing.
Do you have any entrepreneurial role models?
You know, I do. I mentioned my father first. He's the one that always comes to mind because he taught me basically that, yeah, you have to have a plan, but you actually have to start to be able to discover what the real obstacles are. And he would call that pushing into it. You know, you got to push into the problem. And once you push into the problem, you're going to discover what those are. And so I really think the things that I learned from being around him affected me even more than I completely understand.
Seth, what I'd like to do now is talk about the time before you were an entrepreneur. What difficulties did you have to overcome when you started your business?
You know, I think I would have to be honest. I think I've always been an entrepreneur. So as I said, I went straight from school into a family business. The second round or third round, I've had to overcome a fear of failure, a fear of, you know, can I ever be as good as I was the first time? In my case, having a big win early on, I think created this unrealistic burden that everything I do in the future has to measure up or be as good as that was. And so most of the challenges I face in life, I believe are between my own ears. So really the challenges of how I think, of whether I ask good questions and listen to advice and kind of managing that internal dialogue, those are the big challenges. You know, I'm a very blessed man. I have physical health. I have family that loves me. I live in a great part of the world with good friends. And so it's hard for me to talk about how hard it is to be an entrepreneur, because when I look at people that work in a coal mine, I say that's what hard work looks like. What I do is actually a privilege. But I think everybody in life has challenges. Most of those challenges, as I said, is how I process things in my own mind, to be honest.
So how did you live in the shadow of that initial success and continue down that entrepreneurial journey? Because obviously, you probably came out of that experience thinking you could turn your hand to anything and make it a success. And so I assume at some point you discovered that's not always the case.
Well, that's exactly right. I didn't do it very well. And what I did is I moved quickly and I didn't fully appreciate. You know, part of it was just being young, but part of it was just being impatient. And so I moved into, for instance, I got into food franchising. So I ended up with several restaurants and I put them in the wrong locations. I hired the wrong staff, put them in the wrong markets, and I started a bunch of them before I really knew how to do one of them very well. And of course, I thought that this was just going to be a passive investment where I could maybe write the business plan, put in some money, attract some money from my friends, which was the first time I'd ever done that. And, you know, I could start up a business and then I could just show up at my mailbox once in a while and collect income. Of course, that's not how it works in the real world. And as the businesses, the restaurants began to fail, I got pulled deeper and deeper into the actual operations of them. And I can remember, you know, paying for years and years. And I had an advisor show up one time and he just looked at me and he goes, "Man, you guys have been paying so much money. I've always wondered how people can do this like you." And I looked at him, and what he was really saying is, you know, "I would have given up on this a long time ago, pal, because you're not going to turn it around." And so I remember coming home and having this painful conversation with my wife, Neil. And basically I said, here's the reality. I'm stubborn, and so I'll keep trying to fix this, but I don't have any confidence that I actually can fix it. Furthermore, I'm really bad at running restaurants. We're losing our rear end by having me run these restaurants, and I actually hate it. And I'll never forget, my wife looked at me, and she could have said a lot of things at that moment, including, you know, why have you wasted our money? When are we going to get back to the lifestyle you promised me? She didn't. She looked at me and she said, you need to do something you love. And from that moment, I made a decision to call the banks and say, listen, I'm shutting these restaurants down. I can promise you that I will pay you back every penny. And a few years ago, I had a chance to hand that last check off. I was released. She said, hey, you go back and do something you love. And at that point, I was able to reconnect with some of my partners in a business I'd invested in. And that's what created the opportunities for the last business we just sold.
And did you have any doubts that delayed you starting any of your businesses?
No, I don't really think so. It wasn't doubts that delayed my starting.
And what mistakes did you make that slowed your journey?
I think using debt to grow a business is unwise. That definitely cost me a few years because, Dave Ramsey has a great quote which says, you know, debt just allows you to make bigger mistakes. And I found some truth in that after the hard reality. Had I funded it out of pocket, I might have just done one restaurant and I might have learned that I hate it, that I'm bad at it, and that I don't know how to do it quicker. And I would have also discovered that, frankly, a franchise is not a great spot for an entrepreneur. Because in franchising, they basically say, here's the manual, follow the manual perfectly, and you're going to have success. And as an entrepreneur, I would look at the manual and I would think about all the other ways I would prefer to do it. And that's not a helpful attitude when you're a franchisee, what I've discovered. That's my narrative. And so using debt actually was harmful because it just created a bigger hole. And so it took me 10 years to dig out of that hole. Whereas had I not used debt, it would have been a much shallower hole.
And what are some of the things that you did before you started your business that will be helpful tips to some of the listeners who haven't yet taken the first step on the entrepreneur way?
Sure. Well, I can talk a little bit about what I'm doing now because I am actually looking at what I'm going to do next. And I actually am starting with the people that I want to work with, you know, to have a pretty tight filter. Who do I want to work with? What industry do I want to be in? And in what am I passionate about? And to really use that as the grid for making decisions. I like the thrill of starting things, but I don't necessarily like the thrill of running them, the duty of running them. And so it's really important for me at this stage as I plan to ask better questions, to go a little slower, to be comfortable taking the time to say, all right, what industry do I want to be in? Who are the people that I want to work with and around? And then do I really have a passion for the work itself? Because I believe that if you don't have those three things, then it's a challenge.
It sounds like you've become a bit wiser, Seth.
Lord willing, I sure hope so, Neil, because, yeah. I'd hate to waste all those fantastic experiences. I have a quote, and I know that you're a guy who appreciates a great quote, but one of the quotes that I can think of that I do use often is a quote from Bill Gates, and he said, you know, success is a lousy teacher because it seduces normally smart people into thinking that they can't make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, when I read that, it struck a chord because I did find that success is a terrible teacher and I learned a lot through those failures. And I hope that I can apply them in the future, and I expect to.
But the irony is that people quite often judge you by your success, but they don't always judge you by your failures in the same way, do they? So they, they have the wrong view on it almost. If you can be successful, people will look at you and think, well, you've got the Midas touch, you can make things happen. But that failure is almost a negative in people's eyes, and they don't recognize the real value in it.
I think that's true. But those are people that you don't generally know. Mm. And so one of the things that I'm working on now is this philosophy of, and I think this is a real challenge for entrepreneurs, is we get consumed in the outcome. We get consumed in reaching these people out there, right? But we often overlook the people that are right here. So we're so worried about reaching the masses and leaving a legacy and making a splash and making a name for ourselves and worrying about what those people think of us, that we don't really pull it in closer to the people that we have a chance to impact and influence that are right next to us. And so to your point, I agree with you that people we don't know may judge us by our successes and failures, but the people that know us closest, they just judge us on who we are, mm-hmm. right? And whether we help them, whether we care about them, whether we serve them. And to me, I have to do this a lot, is when I get anxious, it's often because I'm worrying about people I don't even know, right? And I'm able to refocus my energies on serving the people around me. And I just think that's a great philosophy for leadership and for business in general.
Seth, what I'd like to do now is just talk about the entrepreneurial journey a little bit more with you. Do you think culture is important from the beginning in a business?
I think it's huge. I think it's the most important thing for a business that's going to scale. Yeah. Specifically, one of the challenges I've seen is when you come into an organization that already has a culture, what I believe is that that's a challenge. You can turn it around and you can put your imprimatur on it, but starting a business and starting a culture from scratch is a huge gift. And I was able to do that in our last business. And what was so rewarding is over time, people would comment not just about our products, which were fantastic, but they would comment on our team and our culture, and that we had a certain DNA that they could pick up on that, you know, wasn't reflected in a spec sheet. It was reflected in the people that we attracted to the organization. So that was one of the things I was most proud of. It's also one of the reasons why when I sold the business, or we sold the business, I should say, it continued to grow. And to me, that's something that I am proud of, because it showed that it wasn't built around, you know, my personality or somebody else's personality. It was actually a healthy organization, and it was a healthy culture that continued on.
So when you set up your next business, what sort of culture are you going to create?
I typically will look for people that are like-minded, but not necessarily same personality types. And so people who value the same things, making an impact, serving others, having fun, being lighthearted, super high on the initiative, people that are, prefer action over just, academia. And then people that you enjoy being with. You know, I prefer to have situations where I can talk about literally anything with my key people. So that could be family, it could be faith, it could be politics. Doesn't mean we need to agree. Doesn't mean that one of us is dictating our views on the other. But I like the open authenticity where people know the real challenges that the leader faces. They know the real challenges that the business faces. So, you know, openness and that it's not a hierarchy, you know, egalitarian in the sense that ideas have merits and the best idea should win. And the best idea doesn't always come from the person who is the designated leader. In fact, you know, often it doesn't. And so I would say transparency, initiative, those are the kind of things that, you know, I look for.
Knowing what you know now, is there anything that if you'd known it when you started out that would have helped you to shortcut the learning curve?
I think focusing on the network a little bit, you know, having grown up where I grew up geographically, having skipped university, probably didn't fully appreciate some of the cultural gatekeepers that maybe can open up doors for a business. I still haven't done a lot of raising of outside capital. I tend to bootstrap things a bit. And so, you know, maybe having a better understanding of raising equity through financial sources and running businesses that are funded by outside parties is interesting to me. And part of me thinks that I may have a gap there that I can kind of shore up. And I'm spending some time thinking about that now.
How much does gut feeling influence your decisions in your business?
Oh, I'd say 80%. I tend to go with my gut, but I try to be really open-minded and listen. I would like to think that I tell myself the truth and that I'm really open to criticism. Of course, the reality is I have thin skin like many other people, and I don't necessarily appreciate criticisms, but I do take the time to listen to them and think through on them. And so I would say gut is 80% and science is probably the other 20. Probably a little bit too heavy on the gut, if I'm honest.
And what makes you uncomfortable as an entrepreneur?
The risks. It makes me uncomfortable when I really stop to understand how much of what motivates me is not consistent with what I believe. And so I find that an entrepreneurial personality, there's tendencies that can be destructive. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of self-doubt. Disappointments are a huge challenge. And so there's the human component. It doesn't matter how smart we are, how successful we are, how structured we are. The role that emotions play and the decisions we make and the way we process reality and our overall satisfaction, that concerns me. And I spend a lot of time reorienting myself to what I consider to be truth, not just how I feel, but this is what's true. And I find that that's very liberating, and it kind of gives me something to do next, get back to work and stop thinking so much.
And what do you think are some of the secrets to success?
For me, the biggest change that's come inside my life, other than faith and the role that God plays in my life, has been a deep understanding of my need for gratitude. You know, when I came off that huge win, Neil, everything had been going so well, and then all of a sudden everything wasn't going well. And I can remember having really painful self-conversations and prayer, and I came to a conclusion which, with a little help, I think, divine help, which the reality was that I just wasn't very grateful. And I looked at the decisions I had made and the thinking behind those decisions, and I wasn't valuing nor was I protecting all that I had been given, but I was striving and I was starting more and I was motivated by this anxiety and this, fear of not succeeding. And so as I began to really look at gratitude, I began to work it into my life. And I developed a process, and I actually write about this in the book, of how I reorient myself using gratitude. And, I'll start with how, just reminding myself that God is in control and that He built this wonderful world without my help and that He can probably hold it together without me. And it just helps me to understand that. And then I move through a process where I think about what God has done for me. And in particular, in my case, it's, the life that I enjoy now through forgiveness of my sins in Christ. And I think about that and I get very personal. And then as I move through that, I say, all right, now that the big things in life are settled, how do I look at the areas of responsibility in my life that I get to lead others? And so I think about my family. I think and I'm thankful for the opportunities I have to lead others, the opportunities I get to speak to others through mediums like your podcast or through the book that I've written and the friends that I have and, all of that. And I really take a good accounting of all the things that have been given to me in my life. And, I have to do that fairly regularly because I get disappointed or I get anxious and I get all off track. And then I find that gratitude and that simple exercise that I use reorients me towards what is true and what I need to be doing next. And as I teach people about gratitude, I say, listen, that's the way I do it. There's 100 other ways to do it. In fact, you know, find something that works for you as an entrepreneur that's driven. But the one thing that the science suggests is that gratitude has a greatest effect on people that are least grateful. And my observation is that driven entrepreneurs can tend to be the least grateful because we're so focused on the future. We're so driven towards, you know, what we set out ahead of us that we often don't just stop and take a good accounting of the reality that, you know, yes, we need to work hard, but all the good things in our life don't always come from how hard we work. There's other ways to view that.
Life is made of constant change, whether we like it or not. And many people say that the only constant in life is change. Seth, how do you try to keep up with change?
I read a lot. I think that's a key. I try to avoid social media, and I don't mean that I avoid it. I try to limit the consumption of social media and force myself to listen in and pay attention to what's going on through sources that I trust. And so I enjoy the Wall Street Journal. I think they do a pretty impartial job of communicating. Today, I jumped on a conference call with somebody that had just come from the CES show and was talking about all the things they discovered with the Consumer Electronics Show and how that's going to change our society. And so, you know, lifelong learning, I think, is the key to change.
What is your favorite book on entrepreneurialism, business, personal development, leadership, or motivation? And can you tell us why you have chosen it?
Yeah, the book that I find myself referring to entrepreneurs the most is a book by a guy named Patrick Lencioni. It's called The Advantage. And it's basically why organizational health trumps everything else in business. And what I like about that book is it's very simple. I didn't say easy. I said it's simple. And he teaches a framework. I think he's a master of framework so that you can simply memorize these things. And I can rattle it off in 12 seconds. In fact, I'll give it a shot. He said, the first thing you have to do is form a cohesive team. And then you need to get clear. And then you need to communicate what you're clear about. And then you need to reinforce that clarity through all of your policies. And for me, that was a very simple framework of this is how you run a company. And having come into the role of a CEO, and we grew our company to around 60 employees and around $60 million, you know, what I needed to understand is where am I at in this process and how do I get us all pointed the same direction? And I loved Lencioni's book because it started with the reality that as the leader of a business that's scaling, and I keep talking about scaling because if you're a solopreneur or a really, really small company, you know, you're playing a lot of different roles. And, you know, it sounds great to say, well, this you have to have a person to do this and a person to do that, but that's not realistic. In my case, I could actually afford to have the people to do the roles. And so what I needed to understand is as the CEO, as the leader, what is my role? And what I was able to do is see my role fundamentally as leading the executive team. Because they were the people that were going to be touching the staff and touching our customers. And then it begs the question, okay, where are you going to lead them? And Lencioni's book laid out a really nice roadmap for me on the six different things we needed to get clear on and how I should communicate those to my team. And I just found it was a brilliant, simple, direct book that didn't have a lot of fluff in it. It was very practical and useful. So Lencioni's book, The Advantage, is one that I refer out a lot.
Everyone, when you have a busy life, listening to audiobooks is a great way to expand your knowledge in the time when you may be doing other things, such as driving or when you are at the gym. We have a special offer for you of a free audiobook of your choosing. To choose your free audiobook, go to www.freeaudiobookoffer.com. As long as you've not already signed up, then you will qualify. Seth, what I'd like to do now is speculate about the future a little bit with you. What one thing would you do with your business if you knew that you could not fail?
Take on outside investment to scale it. I think that's where I tend to pull back, and that is twofold. One is when you take people's money, you need to be very accountable and responsible for that money. The second is you need to open yourself up to their oversight and accountability if you take their money. And that is something that's on the radar. I'm in the process of evaluating or concluding an acquisition of a consulting firm to focus on serving small market businesses. And it was an interesting story and in how I've basically my mentor started this business, and last year he died in a plane accident. And so I've been given an opportunity to purchase the company, and I'm in the process of closing on that transaction. And so it's a tremendous opportunity to bring best practice consulting and coaching to small business leaders like I found myself in. And I'm in the interesting spot of having been a client and having used these services to grow my business. Now I get to change hats and actually be the one providing these services and then take that solution to the market. So that, as I've looked at various options, and I feel like I have lots of options, that is something that is currently right down the fairway with what I want to be about in terms of having an impact and influencing others.
What skill, if you were excellent at it, would help you the most to double your business?
You know, I think being a better listener. I tend to process things quickly and move on, and I don't quite ask good enough questions to follow through. So whether that skill would translate into the expansive growth is to be determined, but I am concluding that I could be a much better listener.
What skill, if you were excellent at it, would help you the most to double your business?
Listening would be a key for me. I find that I'm a man of action, and learning to listen and then beyond just listening to the words, really seeking to understand where the other person's coming from probably would have a huge impact in helping me succeed in places where maybe I've struggled in the past.
In 5 years from now, if a well-known business publication was publishing an article on your business after talking to your customers and suppliers, what would you like it to say?
You know, my view is that success looks like, as a leader, focusing on the right areas and serving those that are around you. As I move into more of a business consulting role, I think 5 years from now, I would like them to say that Seth leads a company that serves an underserved market and brings them skills that they don't normally have on their own.
We are now at the part of the show where you share three golden nuggets with us. Seth, what is your favorite quote and how have you applied it?
You know, the quote that I use most often is, the first person to uncharted waters gets to make the charts. And I apply that in areas of growth and ambiguity where it's the leader's job to venture out. And a lot of times we fall into the temptation of thinking that somebody else has it figured out and that there's a roadmap that we could just get our hands on and we could follow it. But as entrepreneurs, people that go first, often there really is no roadmap, especially if you're an innovator or a disruptor. And so the first person to uncharted waters gets to make the charts. That is actually a quote I came up with, and it's the one that comes back to me probably most often.
Mm-hmm. It's a great quote. So do you think that you are better off being the first person in uncharted waters, or are you better off following after other people have made the errors and you go in there and improve on what they do?
Oh, I definitely think you're better off to be the second. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately or fortunately, depends how you look at it, I think that many of us are wired to go first. And, you know, learning to be a fast follower is a great strategy. It's one that I love, but it's easier said than done. And a fast follower has to be able to innovate quickly to replicate without duplicating successes of others. You need to be able to react to what you're seeing in the market. And so I'd much rather be a fast follower than somebody that's always leading with my face. But, you know, sometimes you have to do both.
And do you have any favorite online resources that you can share with us that'd be useful for other entrepreneurs?
Sure. I think one of the best leaders that I follow, because he's such an intentional mentor, is a guy named Michael Hyatt. Just like it sounds, michaelhyatt.com, because he has built his business and his really his life around curating good ideas around productivity and around social media, marketing, digital content, whatnot. You know, as an author, I found he was particularly helpful for me because in going through some of his courses, it helped me get my mindset straight about why I wanted to write a book, the audience I was trying to go after, and kind of crystallizing my ideas. And so I find myself referring others to michaelhyatt.com quite often.
And what is your best advice to other entrepreneurs?
Make sure that you're completely aligned with a support network. And that starts, if you're married, it starts with your wife. And then be very, very intentional about seeking out mentors, people that have been there and done that before you. Often the whole process of designating somebody a mentor is a little bit awkward. And I say get past all of that and just find people that have been somewhere you want to go. Develop genuine, authentic relationships with them however you can, and then just learn from them. It doesn't have to be as formal as we imagine it, but get yourself surrounded by people that you respect, that have lived life well, and then that's going to serve you well in your ventures.
Everyone, if you didn't manage to get a note of Seth's favorite resource or his favorite book, you can find the links on Seth's show notes page. Just go to theentrepreneurway.com and search for Seth or Seth Buechly in the search box. Seth, is there anything else that you'd like to add about your business?
It's just a privilege to be able to lead and serve businesses at this time. It's a very dynamic time in history where there's fewer barriers to entry for entrepreneurs who want to get in. You know, one of the reasons that I wrote Ambition, Leading with Gratitude, is I just wanted to help entrepreneurs and ambitious people understand some of the downside risks they're going to face if they do venture in. And I really hope that it's helpful. If people want to bounce on over to readambition.com, I've got some free downloads there of an audio chapter that's specifically written for entrepreneurs. In fact, I call the chapter Entrepreneurs in Danger. And I really boil down a few things that we need to be mindful of as we take upon this journey and pursue the entrepreneurial way.
Seth, it really has been an honor having you on the show today. Thank you for coming on here and talking about the journey that you've gone through all the businesses that you've had, and really being quite sort of frank about some of your experiences and some of your learnings, rather than just telling us about the successes. You've also talked about the failures and how they've made it so that you've learned more than from the successes in many cases. Thanks for telling us about your book, but you've also given us a great quote today of your own, and you've inspired us, you've given us great perspective and lots of tips. So thank you very much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure, and thanks for the good work you're doing on behalf of entrepreneurs, Neil.
You are welcome, Seth, and thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Entrepreneur Way. Subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter at Neil D. Ball.